Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Tuesday. It's November 19th, 2024. Great to be back with you live on a Tuesday and every day here at Catholic Connection on EWTN. A big thanks to Vanessa Denhagarmo for filling in yesterday and for my wonderful producer, Andrew Krucek, who always keeps up with my crazy schedule. Had a blast yesterday, though. A very productive day and this morning as well. And a big thank you to the crew in Rome, our wonderful EWTN crew. Came up to Umbria, central Umbria, where we did videos, four or five videos, I'm trying to remember. I think we did five in Assisi, outside of St. Francis Basilica in several different locations, outside of St. Mary Major, where Carlo Acutis is buried, outside Santa Chiara. And then we did some things in our little village here in central Umbria. So it was a great day and a half, and such a dedicated crew. And they handle so much. They were leaving this morning to go back to work on some beautiful concerts that are taking place in Rome that will be broadcast live. There's just a lot of great events going on, especially this time of year in the Eternal City. And we're everywhere, EWTN. But this is all about my new book. The series is going to be part of the EWTN Learn series, which is fab, as the kids would say. And they're free online courses. And they take a lot of their books and they turn them into online courses and provide reflection questions and points to ponder, discussion points, something for you maybe just to sit down quietly with and have some quiet time with the Lord, or maybe do it as a study with some friends. But my book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders, God willing, coming out in January and published by EWTN Publishing. So we are doing this EWTN Learn series, and I believe the goal is to get it out, roll it out about the same time that the book is coming out, again at the end of January, just in time for the Year of Hope. So we'll keep you posted as to when that is available, both the online series, the EWTN Learn series related to my book, and the book itself, Italy's Shrines and Wonders. Speaking of books and speaking of Italians, Anthony DiStefano, Italian brother in the Lord, is joining me at 15 minutes past hour, revisiting a brand new book of his just in time for Christmas shopping. The book is Christmas in Heaven. It is adorable. It is really well done, beautifully illustrated, and just a great message. Christmas in Heaven, Anthony DiStefano joining us. The book is published by our friends at Sophia Institute, the website sophiainstitute.com. And then taking a look at some research about parishes. We're going to be talking with Terry Paplava, and he's an expert in this, and looking at what parishes can do in terms of what people are looking for. What do Catholics seek in a parish? We'll take a look at the research that Terry has done and what it means for you and I and for you and me and our parishes across the country and around the world. So that's what's coming up today on a Tuesday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Can't believe next week is Thanksgiving. That's crazy. Time flies. All right. Some weather issues both on the northwest and on the east coast. So we have powerful storms in the western U.S. and then also down south we have heavy rain and flooding and threats across the central Gulf Coast. And as you'll hear in the news, we have severe dry weather out east. So here's what the National Weather Service is saying in summary. A powerful storm system continuing to bring heavy mountain snow, rain, and high winds to the Pacific Northwest and Northern California through the midweek, so through the rest of the day tomorrow. And then heavy rain and flash flooding potentially exists across the central Gulf Coast over the next few days, including the Florida Panhandle. And then there's also a slight risk of excessive rainfall that's in effect until today and also possibly until tomorrow as well. So that's the weather. You've got issues, as I said, on both sides of the country. So we're praying for you, especially if you have travel in the forecast or in your future, very near future, because of the upcoming holiday. It is 4 minutes past the hour. Let's get started with the news. And don't forget this news and program brought to you by our friends at Joppa. Joppa Products, it's a wonderful company, sell beautiful, beautiful religious items. And you can find them at houseofjoppa.com. Here we go. Mark Mayfield tells us President-elect Donald Trump confirming his plans of four deportations once back in the White House.
A post on Trump's Truth Social platform said the incoming Trump administration is reportedly prepared to declare a national emergency and use military assets for a mass deportation program. Trump responded to the post with simply, true. The president-elect made the border a central issue of his campaign. He repeatedly promised to launch the biggest deportation program on his first day in office.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump choosing several Catholics to serve in his cabinet and other parts of his administration, including environmental lawyer Robert F. Kennedy Jr., three-term Senator Marco Rubio, and Representative Elise Stefanik. As Catholic News Agency tells us this morning at CatholicNewsAgency.com, the 45th and soon-to-be 47th president making more than a dozen announcements within 10 days of his electoral victory over Vice President Kamala Harris. Many of his cabinet nominees and other administration official picks have not yet been announced. As Catholic News Agency explains, among those Trump has chosen from the Catholic Church for his cabinet are Kennedy, who was nominated to the Secretary of Health and Human Services position, Rubio as Secretary of State, Stefanik as Ambassador to the UN, and John Ratcliffe was nominated as Director of the CIA. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro is siding with the state's high court after justices ruled that faulty mail-in ballots can't be counted amid a contentious recount delivery, a big victory to Republican Party officials. The state Supreme Court reaffirming its prior decision in a 4-3 ruling yesterday that counties cannot count incorrectly dated or undated ballots. That decision singled out the boards of elections in Bucks County, Montgomery County, and Philadelphia County, whom they said shall comply with the prior rulings of the court in which we have clarified for mail-in and absentee ballots in their November 1st ruling. The latest ruling yesterday coming amid a slew of lawsuits filed by Republican Party officials in the midst of an aggressive Senate recount effort following the narrow victory of GOP candidate David McCormick over three-term Democrat Senator Bob Casey. McCormick, as Fox News reports, had defeated Casey by some 17,000 ballots in the state, or within a 0.5% margin of error, the narrow victory allowing Casey to qualify for an automatic recount under state law in Pennsylvania. The Republican National Committee, meanwhile, criticizing the governor for not speaking up sooner in defense of the court's actions. And the first openly transgender member of Congress, a biological male who identifies as a woman, a Democrat from Delaware who calls himself Sarah McBride, would be barred from using the women's bathrooms on Capitol Hill under a resolution introduced by a South Carolina congresswoman. Republican Nancy Mace says she's looking to protect women in their private spaces.
I don't want to see a man in a women's restroom. That's not a thing, and it's not going to be a thing up here. It's not going to be a thing anywhere across the country either.
Her resolution, which would require House members and staff to use a bathroom that corresponds with their biological sex, is being introduced just weeks before McBride is set to be sworn in.
Sarah McBride doesn't get a say in this. This is a biological man trying to force himself into women's spaces, and I'm not going to tolerate. You have the radical left that are trying to erase women and erase women's rights.
It would be enforced by the House Sergeant-at-Arms. It would not require Senate passage, and House Democrats, meanwhile, are criticizing that measure. Natalie Migliori tells us New Yorkers are now being urged to conserve water as a major dry spell. A dry spell watch there is upgraded now to a warning.
At least 15 counties across New York State are under a drought warning, including all five New York City boroughs. Officials are asking residents and businesses to reduce how much water they're using by taking shorter showers, washing cars less frequently, and sweeping their driveways and sidewalks instead of hosing them down. New York City is in the driest 7-week stretch in Central Park since records started being kept in 1869. With only 0.19 inches of rain falling from September 30th until now. Rain is supposed to move into the area later this week.
Meanwhile, as Scott Pringle tells us, not far away, firefighters continue to battle new wildfires in New Jersey, which is extremely dry right now as well.
One of the latest fires to start is in the area of Pine Park and the Lakewood Country Club in Ocean County. That fire has now burned through 33 acres and is 20% contained. It has led to some road closures in the area. Meanwhile, forest fire officials are dealing with another fire in southern New Jersey where 40 acres has burned up in Haynesport, Burlington County. Some roads are closed in that area. Much needed rain is in the forecast for New Jersey later in the week.
Meanwhile, in the other coast, the West Coast, Northwest more specifically, they have the exact opposite situation going on. They have a bomb cyclone bringing heavy rain, snow, and high winds to parts of the Northwest through the end of the week, as you heard in our weather forecast. It will bring an atmospheric river with flooding rains and mountain snow to parts of Northern California and Oregon, and some areas could see up to a foot or more of rain. After hitting financial turbulence, Spirit Airlines is filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Travel expert Pete Greenberg says Spirit will continue operating business as usual, however.
Remember, Spirit's already been doing some serious triage leading up to this. They've been cutting back on flights. They've been selling planes. They've been furloughing pilots.
The airline had been in merger talks with Frontier and JetBlue, but nothing panned out. The low-cost carrier reached a deal with bondholders for $300 million in financing to help it through bankruptcy, which it hopes to get out of early next year. And Brad Ford tells us layoffs at Boeing are underway. Boeing announced it's cutting 17,000 workers company-wide.
Boeing plans to cut 10% of its workforce, which would be around 17,000 workers. Layoff notices could go out this week. Boeing CEO says the company has lost $25 billion since 2019 following whistleblower reports, safety issues, and congressional hearings. Boeing has not said where the layoffs will be made.
A South Carolina woman who gained international attention for drowning her two young sons in a lake back in 1994 is now asking the state to release her on parole. Suzanne Smith, now 53, is serving time for the death of her three-year-old and 14-month-old boys at the time she falsely claimed that a black man had kidnapped her children during a carjacking. Hundreds of people, though, have sent letters opposing her potential release. Her parole hearing is set for tomorrow. And there are at least three noteworthy earning reports to keep an eye out for this week. Walmart kicking things off with third quarter results expected today. Chipmaker NVIDIA following the next day with its earnings report coming after the closing bell. And farm equipment maker Deere & Company is in the spotlight later in the week on Thursday. A deadly E. coli outbreak linked to organic carrots affecting now 18 states. Several brands of bagged organic baby and whole carrots have been recalled by California's Grimway Farms.
It seems to be an ongoing problem, and it's somewhat alarming, especially when dealing with raw vegetables that people aren't cooking.
That's Todd Engstrom. He's a food safety expert at San Jose State. E. coli is a bacteria that typically comes from the intestines of animals and gets on produce from contaminated water. There has been one death and 15 hospitalizations among the 39 confirmed cases nationwide. Three cases have been reported in California. The carrots are no longer on store shelves, so people should check their fridges at home to see if they still have some in their house there. And the Salvation Army is launching its annual Red Kettle campaign with some modern twists. They're aiming to raise $250,000 this holiday season, though they've struggled to meet goals in recent years. The organization now offers digital payment options, including Venmo, Google Pay, and Apple Pay, through QR codes on kettle stands. A record number of Americans are indeed planning to go over the river and through the woods to travel to Grandma's house and other places over the Thanksgiving holiday. And that means, of course, highways will be packed. The good news is gas prices have gone down.
We've seen gasoline demand decrease and supply levels have risen.
That's Doug Shoup with AAA Texas, who says the state's drivers, at least in the Lone Star State, are paying about $2.69 a gallon. That's 10 cents cheaper than a year ago, for example, and 40 cents below the national average. A new study from researchers at the University of Virginia School of Medicine indicating, as Tammy Trujillo tells us, that some types of blood pressure medication can cause damage to the kidneys.
RAS inhibitors are widely used to block the effects of an enzyme that's produced by the kidneys when blood pressure drops. The UVA study shows that long-term use of RAS inhibitors can impair kidney function and lead to serious health problems. Researchers hope the study will lead to better ways to manage high blood pressure and other vascular diseases.
It is a Tuesday morning. It's November 19th. Hope you're doing well. And believe it or not, I know it seems, not possible as time moves so quickly. But next week is Thanksgiving, which means that many folks like to get a jump on their holiday shopping, their Christmas shopping. So if that's you, if you're one of those folks who likes to plan ahead, while we have a great gift idea for you, for the young folks in your life, and Anthony DiStefano will be along next to explain. Again, it's a Tuesday morning. Thanks for listening to EWTN on Catholic Connection. We'll be right back.
Hello, Steve Ray here. Hard to believe it's already been 20 years of leading Catholic pilgrimages. So we're going to celebrate with a Danube River Cruise. We've chartered our own ship. We'll share meals and enjoy good Catholic fellowship together. We hope you can join us next June through Budapest, Vienna, Salzburg, Prague, and a whole lot more. But sign up quick. It's already more than half full.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the pilgrimage link.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
She was a mystic and reformer who died at the age of 33.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Catherine of Siena accomplished something no one thought possible. She convinced Pope Gregory XI to return to Rome after the popes had lived in France for almost the whole of the 14th century. They've been there ever since.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This is such a beautiful book. The cover is gorgeous, the theme is wonderful, and the illustrations throughout the book are fantastic. Of course, we would expect nothing less from our friend Anthony DiStefano, his latest children's book, Christmas in Heaven, from our friends at Sophia. And also, he's always generous and wants to give away as many books as humanly possible, as many addresses and names as my producer Andrew can write down in two segments of the show. So here's the deal. If you call in at 877-573-7825, we're not going to be taking questions, but you can give Andrew your information. He'll take down your name and your address, and then Anthony will take those addresses and names and send you a copy of the book. Anthony, always good to talk to you, and I can't believe that Thanksgiving is next week, which means a lot of people are thinking about getting the holiday list done early. This is a perfect gift for a young family. So tell us about the book. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thank you very much for having me, as usual. I love being on your show. I'm always interested, Teresa, in writing books about the true meaning of Christmas. Christmas has obviously been secularized almost beyond recognition. And you know that I've written several children's books already about the Nativity, you know, from the point of view of a little star of Bethlehem and a grumpy old ox and Joseph's donkey. But I wanted to try something different this time. I wanted to do this from a different angle. And what I did was I decided to focus on the fact that Christmas is Jesus' birthday. And then in heaven, there's a huge celebration going on with all the angels and the saints. So in this story, very simply, I have a little boy who is sad because his grandmother has died, and it's Christmas time. And he's wondering how she's celebrating Christmas in heaven. And so his grandfather, who is the husband of the woman who has died, sits the boy down on his knee and tries to paint this consoling picture of him, for him, of heaven and the big birthday party that's going on there with all the angels and the saints and, of course, Our Lady and Jesus and his grandmother, too. So this is a book about the true meaning of Christmas, but it's also an introduction to the angels and the saints, and it's a book, hopefully, about grieving with hope, about hope in the resurrection and life everlasting in heaven.
Now, what's also really helpful, I think, is you put a note in here regarding purgatory, and you address it to the little ones and their moms and dads.
I do indeed, because you know purgatory is a doctrine of the Catholic Church. It's been a doctrine of the Church since the very beginning, and it's based on the fact that, as Revelation 21 says, nothing unclean can enter heaven. The fact is that there are people out there who are saved. They died and they've been saved, but they still have on their souls some stain of sin that has already been forgiven, and sometimes these souls might have an attachment to sin that has been forgiven. Purgatory is the place where we're cleansed of those imperfections so that we can see God face to face without any shame or guilt or attachment to what is unholy. And I, you know, so in this book, what I try to do is give parents a little notes to help them explain this to children. And it's very easy to explain, actually. You know, if you're going to go to meet the president or the pope, or you're going to go to a big wedding or a big party of some kind, you would presumably wash your face, comb your hair, maybe change out of your gym clothes before you go. Well, heaven is the biggest party of them all, and we're going to be meeting the most important person, the Lord. So purgatory is the place where we get cleaned up for that. So I didn't concentrate on purgatory because it's a book about heaven, but I wanted to at least mention it at the beginning of the book.
We're talking with Anthony DiStefano. Of course, his latest book is Christmas in Heaven, published by Sophia Institute. And, of course, we'll give you the link to Sophia's website as well. If you prefer, maybe just call in and get a free copy. Why not? That's a great idea and a great way to get a nice Christmas gift early. Call 877. This is our Ave Maria EWTN toll-free line, 573-7825. 877-573-7825. And Anthony is generously offering free books. And all you need to do is just be patient, because Andrew can only write so fast or type so fast. He'll take down your name and your address, and he'll give all that information to Anthony, and then Anthony's peeps will send you a free copy of the book. Now, what I love is there's so many lessons in here, and I am big on the saints. I love the saints. There's over 10,000 saints, and you really personalize this using your imagination and your creativity, Anthony, in how the different saints would be contributing, which I think is so special.
Yes, I wanted this to be an introduction to the saints. So, of course, I tried to include the most famous saints so people would recognize them, like St. Michael the Archangel, St. Peter, St. Joseph, St. Francis, St. Patrick, St. Nicholas, St. Jude, St. Therese, St. Joan of Arc, naturally Our Lady. But I also included some lesser-known saints like St. Honoré, for instance, who's the patron saint of baking, because, of course, you need a birthday cake for a birthday party. And St. Gregory and Cecilia, who are the patron saints of music, because you need singing at a birthday party. So I included these saints and tried to make sure that they were doing what they're famous for in life. And so we have St. Francis, for instance, surrounded by animals, puppies and sheep and donkeys and kittens. And we have St. Martha, who is famous, of course, for doing hospitality chores in the gospel. She comes behind him trying to sweep up because presumably all those animals have made a mess. And then we have St. Jude, you know, saving the day and helping her with a vacuum cleaner. This is a playful, humorous, sort of lighthearted presentation of the saints. And the reason why I've kept it light is not only to show what the saints were famous for, but also because we're dealing about a serious subject here, which is the death of a grandmother and a child and a grandfather who are grieving. So I wanted to be upbeat and happy about that, even though it's a serious subject, because in our Christian religion, our view is extraordinarily optimistic. We believe that death does not have the final word. The final word is resurrection and life everlasting in heaven. So it was important to me that this book be upbeat and positive.
I'm looking at pages 14 and 15, really, really special. So you have St. Thomas Aquinas. He's reading a book. St. Martha starts cleaning and now starts to cook. St. Lawrence is turning the roast on a fire while Joan of Arc helps him to make the flames higher. Because, of course, we know San Lorenzo said, "Turn me over, I'm done on this side." And the image of his martyrdom is from a grill. And then we know that St. Joan of Arc was burned at the stake. So it is a lighthearted way of looking at some of the serious things that happen in the saints' lives as well.
That's right. Catholics have a sense of humor. You know, we're not Puritans. G.K. Chesterton says that angels can fly because they take themselves lightly. And that applies to all of us here. So it's a serious subject, but in order to deal with this serious subject in a constructive, healthy way, we tried to keep it a little light, and we used the saints for that purpose.
There's over 10,000 saints. How did you decide? I mean, your creativity is amazing. How did you decide which ones were going to go in the book? Because there's so many great stories of the saints.
You know, it's all about the story. The story must always dictate everything, because that's the thing that's going to entertain children and teach children. So I wanted to have these angels and saints not just doing random things, but doing what they're known for, things that they're patron saints for. So that's why we have St. Francis surrounded by animals, and St. Nicholas, you know, putting presents under the tree, and St. Anthony finding a present that's lost, and St. Joseph building a manger because he was a carpenter, and St. Therese handing out flowers. But also, certain saints couldn't be included. I would have loved to include, excuse me, St. Padre Pio, for example. But he's mostly known because he had the stigmata and bilocating and knowing people's sins before they confess them. Those are obviously qualities that don't lend themselves easily to a children's book. So while I would have loved to include Padre Pio and Maximilian Kolbe, it's harder because those saints died in certain ways, like, for instance, Maximilian Kolbe died in Auschwitz. You know, I didn't want to have a concentration camp imagery in the book. So it had to do with keeping the book light what picking saints that were famous, but also could be depicted doing, you know, lighthearted things in the book.
Yeah, and St. Nicholas is handling the toys, right?
Yes, and he loses one, and St. Anthony, of course, comes and helps him out because he's the patron saint of finding lost items.
So tell me,
glossary,
before we take...
There's a glossary at the end of the book, which has a little one-paragraph description of each saint and a little thumbnail illustration. And the paragraph sums up the essence of who the saint is and why they're doing what they're doing in the book. So parents and children can refer back and forth from the glossary to the book.
This is a nice catechesis also, not just for kids, but for adults. We'll talk about that when we come back with Anthony DiStefano. Don't forget, the book is Christmas in Heaven, his latest children's book, published by Sophia Press. And the phone number to call to get a free book, 877-573-7825. My amazing producer, Andrew, is taking calls as we speak, and we'll be right back with Anthony. Stay tuned.
Sixty on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The first commandment: I am the Lord your God. You shall have no strange gods before me. In this commandment, God seeks to protect us from false claims to our worship and obedience. And there's a great sad history of people who have trusted in gods other than him or things other than him, and the ruin that it has caused. So God is trying to protect us and call us to an absolute trust and obedience of him. He asks us to trust him above all things and above all other people or so-called gods. We have to also avoid things like consulting horoscopes, palm reading, clairvoyance, recourse to mediums, any desire to try to control things apart from God. God simply says, trust me, I'm the Lord your God. The first commandment, I am the Lord your God. You shall have no strange gods before me.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Family life is a ministry. We tend to think of ministry as the churchy stuff we do at church, but the word ministry means doing any activity that communicates God's love to another person. When we help our family love and worship God every day at home, we're doing ministry. When our families cherish each other with Christ's love, we're doing ministry. When our family is kind to others, or when we invite others to our home for godly fun and fellowship, or when we try to attend to each other's needs generously and cheerfully, we're doing ministry by doing things that share God's love with others. The ministry of domestic church life is among the most important ministries of all. And discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life. Check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Having fun, as always, talking about another great book for you and your family from our friend Anthony DiStefano, Christmas in Heaven. All right, what I love about your books is that you could sit down and read these books, and you're reading it to your children, your grandchildren, your nieces, your nephews, maybe in a classroom if you're a teacher or involved in catechism. And you learn something as well as an adult. I mean, you can never really, we're only scratching the surface, I believe, in our lifetime because the church is so deep and there are so many wonderful saints out there. And you have a reference, as you mentioned in the back, describing the saints. So this is what I love, Anthony. It can be a form of catechesis for us as well.
Well, I hope so. You know, I've always been keenly aware that adults are reading these books to the children. Sure, children read the books by themselves, but the best experience, the most loving experience, is when a parent or a grandparent or an older sibling reads a book to a child, right with the child next to them. That's an experience that children will never forget as long as they live, and someday they'll do that same with their children. But at that time, sometimes they'll ask parents and older people in their lives to read books to them 5 times, 10 times, 20 times. So you have an adult that is reading a book 10 or 20 times. Why would I ever miss out on an opportunity to catechize them? So I always try to include in my children's books a deeper levels for the parents to understand. And I think that's really been the key to my success. I've written something like 18 children's books. Some of them have been very, very popular here and in other places around the world. I think it's because they're for adults, too. And the model that I always use is the parables of Jesus. I've always been awed by Jesus' parables. They work on so many different levels. Young people can understand them. People with little education can understand them. But at the same time, they have depths that the greatest theologians and philosophers are still exploring today. So, mm-hmm. I always thought that it would be great if I could at least model my children's books on that kind of thing, so that kids could get the main message in a powerful, entertaining way, but also the adults who are reading the books can get something out of them too, a deeper understanding sometimes, or just sometimes to be reminded of truths that they already know and perhaps have forgotten.
Now, do you have favorite saints? And I'm sure we all do, but did you include any of your favorite saints in the book?
Well, my name, in Italian is Antonio Giuseppe Francesco mm-hmm. Di Stefano. So Anthony Joseph Francis Di Stefano, and Di Stefano means from Stephen. So I have St. Anthony, St. Joseph, and St. Francis as patron saints, and St. Stephen. And I got three of the four in there. I didn't get St. Stephen in there, but I did get St. Anthony, St. Joseph, and St. Francis. And I got St. Joan of Arc in there and St. Therese, who are favorite saints of mine. St. Bernadette is a favorite saint. She didn't make it into this book, but she made it into Our Lady's Wardrobe. And so I've tried to get all of my favorites into the various books that I've done.
The illustrations are beautiful, very detailed. Who was your illustrator this time around?
A lady named Bernadette Carstensen. She is a very well-known Catholic artist. She's done many church altarpieces around the country and religious paintings, especially of Our Lady and the saints. She's got a great husband, a great big family out in California, plenty of kids, one baby on the way right now. And I wanted an artist for this book who knew their faith, but also could create a happy book, a bright book, a sort of a book with vintage-style illustrations, almost like Norman Rockwell. That's the kind of feeling I wanted. And I wanted also someone who could be a little whimsical, someone who loves our faith, but who also wasn't afraid to be a little playful and show a sense of humor so that we can make these illustrations not only poignant and beautiful, but also fun. We want to show children that heaven is a happy place, so the illustration should be happy, too. And I think Bernadette did a fantastic job.
Talking with Anthony Di Stefano, of course, his latest book, Christmas in Heaven, which has been out for a while now, but we are giving away some free copies, 877-573-7825. And Andrew is busy taking down your name and your address, and so be patient because we're getting a lot of calls. So how does that work with an illustrator? I've written a number of books, as you know, and thank you for support on my latest book, Italy, Shrines and Wonders. I really appreciate it.
Great,
but I've never worked with an illustrator in that capacity in terms of writing a children's book. So do you look for the illustrator? Does the publisher do that? And what is it that you mentioned you wanted somebody who could be whimsical and solid in their faith, obviously. But do you have discussions with the illustrator, take a look at their work?
Well, I'm very blessed. I get to choose my illustrator. Other people in this business, the publisher chooses the illustrator for them. But because I've had so many successful children's books, I have a bit of clout. And I get not only to choose my illustrator, but I'm the art director for all of these projects. And I love working with illustrators. And it's a joyful thing, unlike writing an adult nonfiction book, which is very wonderful and helps a lot of people. It's a kind of lonely. You're there by yourself writing this book for months. But with a children's book, you get to collaborate with someone and bounce ideas off someone. And so it's kind of it's more fun. It's less lonely writing children's books. And I always choose my illustrators based on the mission of the book. For instance, when I did Our Lady's Wardrobe, the point of that book was to show that Mary is real. She's up in heaven now with a glorified body. She's not a cartoon. She's not fake. She's not pretend. So I chose an illustrator who had the ability to do photorealistic illustrations. And then there are books that involve animals, like the grumpy old ox or the donkey that no one could ride. And so I go for someone who is the best at doing animals in the world, who can put human expressions on animal faces. And I use a man named Richard Cowdrey, who's in the New York Times bestselling artist. And in this book, like I said, I wanted something a little bit whimsical because we're dealing with characters walking around in heaven. So you don't have to be photorealistic, but you want to have a little bit of a sense of humor and a little vintage kind of style, and that's why I picked Bernadette.
So when is the next one coming out? I'm sure you're working on another one, and what's the topic? I mean, generally, can you give us a little preview?
I've got five books coming out in the next 15 months. It's just, I don't know why. I was hit with a bunch of inspiration. The next book is a children's book for Catholics called, it's on the Eucharist. Called From Bread and Wine to Saints Divine, and it's a book all uh-huh. about making children understand the metamorphosis that takes place in the Eucharist and why it takes place. After that, I've got an adult nonfiction book coming out called The Miracle Book, a simple guide to asking for the impossible, and that's for adults, and that's about the practical ways to obtain a miracle, and that's coming out in June. And then I have a book, a children's book, on the true meaning of Halloween coming out called All Hallows Eve, another attempt
wow,
to take
that's
back
great.
From the culture. And then I have a book called The Sparrow Who Fell to the Ground, which is based on the scripture quote. So I've got a bunch of stuff coming out in the next
So, like, when do you sleep? I mean, people tell me I read a lot of books. I think, my goodness,
you know,
cranking
I work,
them out
I,
left and right.
I'm a little OCD. When I have an idea and I know it's good, I'll just keep working on that round the clock until I have it. But then there are long, long stretches where I don't have an idea or where the ideas are bad, and so I have plenty of free time then.
Well, this is a great Christmas gift, and we already had a full line the minute we put the number out, so I'm not sure where we are now, but we had a ton of people calling in. Thank you always for being so generous and giving away so many books.
Pleasure. I love your listeners. They're the best. I always love being on your show, and I really appreciate it, Teresa.
Well, Anthony, thank you. Keep up the great work. Anthony DiStefano, again, you need to grab a copy of this book. Hopefully you can grab one today and talk to my wonderful producer, Andrew. Eric is already in studio helping Andrew out to take down your name and your number and your address and all that good stuff. So, Anthony, if they don't get a book today, where can they find it, hon?
Oh, Amazon, EWTN, anywhere. You can go on my website, www.anthonydistefano.com, and that'll point you to various places you can buy the book. But it's wherever books are sold.
Okay, great. Well, all the best. Congrats on another great book, a beautiful book, really nicely illustrated. And if I don't talk to you before Thanksgiving, have a happy Thanksgiving, my friend. God
you
bless.
You too. You too.
All right. We'll be right back on a Tuesday morning, Christmas in Heaven, from Anthony DiStefano. Check it out. We'll be right back.
How important was unity to Jesus Christ? Very, according to the Catholic Catechism. He bestowed unity on his church at the outset. It is something the church can never lose, but with prayer and work, she can improve. This is why, the Catholic Catechism says, Jesus himself prayed at the hour of his passion and continues praying, that they may all be one. As you, Father, are in me and I in you, may they also be one in us. The Catechism further states, the desire to recover the unity of all Christians is a gift of Christ and a call of the Holy Spirit. The Catechism says there are certain things required in order to respond adequately to this call. A permanent renewal of the Church, conversion of the heart, prayer in common, fraternal knowledge of each other, ecumenical formation, dialogue among theologians and Christians, collaboration in good works. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John 14. This is Jesus in the upper room with the disciples before he's going out to his sacrifice of himself for our salvation. And Philip says to the Lord, "Show us the Father, and we'll be satisfied." Jesus looks at Philip and says, "Philip, have I been with you all this time? Don't you understand? When you see me, you're looking at the Father." In fact, only two people throughout human history have given rise to the question, not who is he, but what is he? The two people are Buddha and Jesus. Buddha's answer was, don't come to me, don't look to me, look to my doctrine, look to what I teach. Jesus' answer was, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart. Jesus is explicitly claiming to be God.
So what do Catholics seek in a parish? There's some very interesting research, follow-up research, from our friends at ACST Catholic, and to tell us all about it is Terry Blava. Terry, great to have you on the program again, and I think that's a really important question, and boy, you have to think, there's so many things I think that people seek in a parish, but now you have some latest research on this. What did you find? Good morning, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Teresa, thank you so much, great to be with you. Yeah, this has been an interesting ongoing journey. So if you remember, we talked a year ago about American Beliefs Study that we had been conducting.
Right.
So So one of the outcomes of that, when we asked what people seek in a parish, obvious answers were sacraments and quality homilies. But the other piece was this thing called warm and friendly encounters.
Yeah.
And I know that left me a little dissatisfied because everyone would wonder what a warm and friendly encounter is. So that is what we went back to delve into a little bit more with specific questions. Probably there's about a dozen different things that we ask people to rank. Would you consider this very warm and friendly or not? And what we found, I think, is interesting. Some obvious things that we're pretty good at. Someone greeting you at the door with a smile, seeing someone you know at Mass. We're getting better about greeting people when they come to the door. What I thought was a little, well, not surprising, but more interesting for us as a reminder is someone invited you to Mass, and more importantly, someone invited you back, which we almost, you know, very rarely do, that when we interact mm-hmm. with someone who we see as a visitor, that we actually say, so glad you're here, please come back, and have ways of intentionally inviting people back. So that was the big, I think, key finding and maybe some insight for parish leaders and for us as parishioners. There are two takeaways I had. One was we can't just take hospitality for granted, and I don't think we do, or we don't think we do, but it extends to the parishioners, and it's every one of our role to be hospitable and welcoming to each other and to people that we don't know when we see them at Mass or in the parish. And that's the big takeaway. It's obvious, and yet sometimes we just don't do it because we don't think about it.
And why don't you think we think about it is because sometimes we're like the spoiled kids in the block and the sacraments are, you know, the amazing, and we have such a gift in the sacraments, we just don't expect to reach out that way. Or what do you think is in the Catholic grain of this? I mean, why we do what
well,
we do?
Probably greeting. a couple of different things. I think that's true. I think some of it is just we continue to be there out of our sense of obligation and forgetting sometimes about the awe of the mysticism of the Mass, that we're not deeply engaged in it, so we're not that excited. We're there because we have to be. Or, you know, you might just be tired, or, you know, other reasons about things that are going on in your family might be preoccupying you, so you're not particularly happy to see anyone else or not wanting to interact with them. I think more core, though, is that we're just in a habit of going and being in our place and doing our thing and not prioritizing the fact that we actually should be looking out for someone else. We're more self-focused when we're attending Mass. And I think that's probably the biggest thing of all. It's long ingrained habit of this is what we do and we're here for us. And then that extends to whether or not we feel good about letting people sit next to us or in our pew or moving over sometimes.
Or taking our seat, right?
Right.
It's a very Catholic thing. My mom, right, bless her heart, and her best friend, Jean, they both went to be with the Lord. They were a hoot and a half. They had the same seat every week in the church. And everybody knew them, and it was kind of an ongoing, you know, joke. It was so cute to see Rosie and Jeannie sitting there. And what was so sweet is when Jean passed away and we were at her funeral, two of the ushers went and sat in Jean and my mom's seats because they remembered them so fondly being there. But at the same time, I think we do get too comfortable and maybe not willing to give up our seats. So that's a good reminder for us. Interesting, though, too, Terry, this should be encouraging for people because sometimes we want to invite someone to Mass, but we don't do it because we think, oh, they're going to think I'm overly religious or some sort of a zealot. I don't want to make them uncomfortable. But this is proof that those personal invitations matter.
Absolutely. And I think, obviously, it's how you approach it, the way you invite people. But I also think the fact that all of us need to be remind ourselves that we're excited to be there, that we're, you know, that we're happy to be there for this experience. So part of it is when we do invite someone and they come in, that the experience of the general mood of the people in the congregation at the time during Mass is one of, is positive. You know, I don't want to say happy because I think that's too shallow. It's like, it's one of like, this is really an amazing thing and we're all really into it. And you should want this too. So we do it by demonstrating our own love for the sacrament and celebration of the Mass.
And Terry, you also have some information, some action items that we can do as parishioners to help our pastors and our local church leaders to make a difference here in reaching out. Do you want to go through that list?
Yes, exactly. Yes. Now, and there are a couple of different lists depending on which resource you look at. So the resource I primarily reference can be found at acftcatholic.com/welcome. Mm-hmm. And that is the original writing. And what I've got there is a couple of things we've always talked about is encourage that we actively encourage that our parish leaders actively encourage parishioners to invite others, that the leaders do it in the homily or in announcements after the homily maybe is really where it should be, and that we do it as leaders through other communications, and that invitation is part of the culture, that the pastor and the ministry leaders make this a cultural thing, and then that we make sure that we remind parishioners that this is something that parishioners have a role in as well, that's an equal role, not just the parish leaders inviting people. I think it's possible to be intentional enough to create, you know, some of us have a hospitality ministry or maybe an invitation ministry that's a little bit more focused outwardly and also focused on what happens when someone does show up. What's their experience getting to a pew? Can we introduce them to anyone else? Do we have a way of following up with them? Do we have mechanisms in place that allow us to find out who they are, and if we can, that we have a way to follow up? And, one of those also is important that we remind our parishioners to continue to reach out to each other, which we do, but sometimes we don't bother. We're just like, oh, so-and-so's not here. I wonder why, and we don't do anything. So be proactive is another important thing, I think, as part of this.
I also noticed that you're talking about this research, displaying welcome signs outside the church, maybe on the marquee or something. You know, they have those signs out there where they can change them electronically. That's interesting.
Absolutely. You know, I don't know about your experiences, but when I'm traveling and I see, often it's not a Catholic church, but I love it when I see a Catholic church, is banners out along the driveway saying, welcome, you know, welcome here. Please come celebrate with us. Or, of course, more formal signs like you're talking about that could be electronic, or it could be posted out by the road. But that it makes such a difference, I think, when you're going by and you see on a corner this like, yeah, that looks interesting. Maybe I should stop in there. It'd be great to go. And some of them have what I have in my mind is those probably 6 or 8 foot tall, but they're maybe a foot wide, you know, tall, long, flapping banners that are, you know, welcome, and it's right along the driveway is a wonderful kind of thing. And sometimes we do it, but we do it for a special occasion. I think making it more intentional that, you know, you're welcome here. Come and find out what's so great about us.
I think it's really important. The thing, though, being married to a deacon, sometimes it's hard to include that in a homily because you only have a certain amount of time. So this is just an idea, because I know that this works at our parish in the Archdiocese of Detroit. We are, our priests and our pastor, always when they're opening the Mass, they say, thank you for being here. You're all welcome. And whether you're watching online, because we still carry our Masses online we have a lot of elderly in our parish who can't always make it weekly in person. And so they always say that, whether you're here in person, whether you're watching online, you are always welcome to our parish. And then, especially during the holidays, they make a big deal out of saying, we're so glad you're here, please come back, blah, 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 come to the refreshment. So I think kind of repeating it, you know, you have to say, you have to tell someone seven times, but I think in the beginning of the Mass is a good place, too. I don't know if your research has found anything like that.
Well, one of the findings, I didn't specifically mention it, but it is being greeted. Being welcomed at the beginning of Mass is another part of the findings, that's one of the key things that people say makes a warm and friendly experience. So you're right on target with that from the beginning, that we welcome people who attend, who are there, everyone. And I think that's absolutely it. Set the culture from the beginning. We're not suggesting, nothing that we've found ever says standing people up and saying, are you a visitor, is a good thing. That generally makes people uncomfortable.
Right.
So
right.
Just welcoming, and what I was trying to figure out, you wouldn't do this at the beginning of Mass, maybe there's another way to do it in other communications or in the bulletin that's just a reminder to parishioners themselves. Mm-hmm. And that, I think it might be able to be worked into a homily, but there's the, you know, please, we're grateful you're here. Please join us after Mass for our fellowship. Please find out what's so great about us, or ideally we have a welcome desk, and please stop by the welcome desk and maybe get a gift, you know, prayer card or something. And then, but also all of us are part of welcoming each other, just a reminder to, you know, to reach out to each other actively. And that's that's the part that we have to figure out where and how to do that, because I think it's too easy for us to fall into the mode of history of depending on the pastor or the ministers or the deacons to do things, to be the active ones, and easy to pass off the ownership. And we have a clear ownership in this, is what it's indicating. We all
absolutely
do. We all have part of
it. Everybody in the evangelization pool, nobody gets a pass, because we're all called to evangelize by virtue of our baptism. We're talking with Terry Peplavis, who's the general manager of ACST Catholic, and as a cradle Catholic, his faith was lukewarm until he was confronted, I love your bio, by the way, by the intense challenge and commitment he heard in the message about stewardship. What do I own and what owns me? So that question itself, those questions are very important. But Terry, the other thing that I think is really great is one of the points is knowing that people are being prayed for and offering prayers for people. That's a biggie as well.
Absolutely. So that's both intercessory prayer, but even personal prayer. And I think the part that we need to remember to do is that when people are shut in, that we tell them we're praying for them. Mm-hmm. Or that we have the kind of information that allows us to note that someone who was here, who was participating, is no longer coming. A neighbor might know that, but parish leaders might know that. So the better information we have about keeping track of this and making sure that we then have a way to reach out to them and then offer prayer for them, all of the above becomes something that really is important to developing the community.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say I'm previewing it because we just put the finishing touches on a new long form action guide called Creating a Welcoming Parish in a Lonely World, and some of this is expanded on in that, and that's not up on our website yet, but we have it. I'll be looking forward to being able to put that in people's hands if they're interested in it as well.
Yeah, and also maybe coming back on and talking about it even further. Because the timing of this, I think, is super important, and I'm glad you're on the week before Thanksgiving, because it gets people, hopefully they're, you know, coming up with ideas, and maybe there's someone they can invite to Thanksgiving Day Mass, or once the holidays do kick in and we have all the beautiful events that happen during Advent, and to bring someone maybe to an Advent retreat. In addition to Mass, to invite them to something else going on at your parish. Terry, great to catch up with you again. Thanks for all your wonderful work and research and helping us make our parishes welcoming to all. And where do we get the latest research that you mentioned that we're talking about this morning?
Thank you, Teresa. Well, the original research, the first study, if people are interested in going back and seeing it, is at AmericanBeliefs.com. And under reports, it's the Engaging Our Communities report. The new link to go to is ACSTCatholic.com/welcome.
Thank you so much. Great to speak with you. And you have a blessed Thanksgiving and look forward to catching up with you again very soon. And we'll be right back on a Tuesday. Let you know what's come up on a Wednesday edition of Catholic Connection. Stay tuned.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Catholic Connection is sponsored by House of Joppa. House of Joppa's mission is to share the beauty of our one holy Catholic and apostolic faith in our homes through Catholic home decor, art, candles, statues, rosaries, and Catholic jewelry. They're gifts designed to help you live out your Catholic faith. For more information, go to houseofjoppa.com. That's houseofjoppa, J-O-P-P-A.com.
More of Catholic Connection coming up on EWTN and Ave Maria Radio.
Just want to let you know, when the show ends in about a minute or so, we are no longer taking calls. We've received probably about 50 calls already for the Anthony DiStefano book, so maybe next time when Anthony's on. But if you call, unfortunately, giving the free book ends at the end of the show. But we appreciate you calling in, and look forward to talking to you, God willing, tomorrow on a Wednesday with Joan Lewis and some other great stuff coming up.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.